Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose. Presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is time-honored techniques, meditations practiced through the ages. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. And during that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. I'm so glad to be meeting you here on the airwaves. And today we're going to be going into traditional meditations that are practiced now and that have been practiced throughout the centuries. And these are really time-honored and true techniques for calming the mind and opening us up to enlightenment. What's not to like about that? And also, meditation is of a special significance to me because it's one of the four cornerstones that I like to use in teaching about how to develop our psychic ability, along with dream interpretation, sanctuary, and prayer. And those four cornerstones, firmly placed on a solid foundation of self-love, can really allow us to create a self-actualized life for ourselves. And not only do we really develop our psychic ability with those four cornerstones on self-love, but we also find our own true purpose and deepen our spirituality at the same time, which I call the great triple blessing. So together with those other tools, meditation is one of the foundational practices that I really like to have in my life. And I've been fortunate enough to share that with other people, and it's really helped them as well. So I'm so glad that you're interested in this topic because it's really a wonderful one. But before I go into it any further, I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this was a gift to me from my friend and mentor, Jana Massey, and she invited us all to use it freely, so I do the same for you. And it goes like this, and please join me in this agreement if you will. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together, we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Can you all agree?
I do.
Thank you, Tony, very much, and thank you, everyone.
Josephine, we received many messages of support about last week's show from our listeners, and I'd just like to read a few of them out. The first one is from Grace in San Luis Obispo, and she writes, "Lovely, lovely. Love you big." That's a nice, sweet one. Ooh. Then we have another message from Deborah from Los Angeles, and she writes, "Dear Josephine, I finally got to hear your show. I just listened to this evening's show on meditation, which was perfectly timed, and it was oh so wonderful to hear your loving voice. It calmed my body and spirit the way our conversations do. I have missed hearing you and our occasional sessions and can't wait to go and listen to all the archives. Thank you for sharing in such an accessible way. Big hugs, Deborah."
Oh.
"I learned so much about everything tonight."
Oh.
And our third message is from Marion, and she writes, "Hi. Tonight's show was like being in a space where it's so comfortable the rest of the world disappears, and I am better I'm not alone in this journey, Josephine. I hadn't realized so clearly how much the body and mind like that comfortableness. It's the feeling that you have while being surrounded by the best people in your life, and you are so comfortable, everything in your life makes sense. Nothing feels undone, nothing feels wrong that you have done, and it's okay that the laundry isn't done. I send this off with blessings to you, Josephine, and also loving gratitude to Frank and Tony. Much love and blessings, Marion."
Oh, isn't that nice? Thank you guys so much, Grace, Deborah, and Marion, for writing in. It really makes me happy. Oh, so tonight I'm going to start off by mentioning the four elements in meditation, and this was something that was on the firstholistic.com website, and I just thought it was really a nice way to look at that. And so perhaps you could show that first slide for us, Tony.
Certainly.
And it's just a nice, simple way to look at the basic structure of meditation. So first of all, we need a quiet, comfortable place to, well, a quiet place to meditate. And then next, a comfortable or poised posture. And then thirdly, an object for attention or awareness to dwell on. And then a passive attitude. And I think that's just a really nice sort of gives us a little overview of, oh, yes, okay, that's right. That's what meditation is all about. We want to have a quiet place. We usually assume some sort of posture. We have a thing that we're focusing our attention on. And then we have a passive attitude. And, you know, we can do meditation either in stillness or in activity. So, for instance, you know, there's, and so regarding the comfortable or poised posture, so it can be very comfortable for us to do walking meditation as well. There's also dancing meditation, like the Sufi dancers. I used to do all of my meditation lying down because I had an injury pattern was when I started my meditation, and that's some 25 years ago. And so lying down is a perfectly great way to do meditation also, especially if you're well-rested, because then you don't doze off. But it's fine if you doze off, too, because, as we've said before, the Dalai Lama's quote, sleep is the best meditation. And then most commonly, I think we find ourselves doing meditation in a seated position, and that can be a more formal sitting, or it can just be seated in a chair. So then, additionally, we'll move on to the next slide, if you would, Tony, for me.
Certainly.
And this is the four types of meditation. And these were mentioned on the Institute of Noetic Science website, and I think it's just a really nice way to sort of categorize the types of meditation that we do. Of course, there are countless forms of meditation. There are so many different ways that we can do meditation. But these just kind of give us a little basis to go from. So the first would be concentration meditation. That's where we really kind of focus on something. The second would be open awareness, where we really open our awareness to a greater aspect of consciousness. The third would be mindfulness, where we really direct our thoughts and our intention in a particular way, like loving kindness. And then the fourth would be guided imagery or guided meditation, where we use our imagination to create a different feeling in ourselves. And so we'll start with the first type, which is the concentration meditation. And so here, the meditator usually uses something to focus their concentration on. So that can be an image, like, for instance, you can look at the image of one of the many versions of the divine. It could be, St. Mary of Guadalupe, or it could be St. Francis, or it could be Kuan Yin, or Mother Mary, or Jesus, or the Buddha, or Shiva, or any number of images that you'd like to use. It could even be the image of a rose or of a flower or of a bird or anything that you'd like to focus your attention on using an image. Then as well, sound. So sometimes there will be mantras or sayings or particular phrases that you might learn and say again and again. Or it can be the breath, noticing how the breath moves in and out of the body, watching that thin stream of air come in through the nose and enter and fill the lungs, and then perhaps allowing it to exhale out through the mouth. So that's another way that we can focus our concentration. One of my favorites that I used a lot when I was first beginning meditation was the candle flame. There was something very mesmerizing that would really help me to hold my concentration if I was meditating at night in a dark room, and I would light a candle. And often the way my setup is in my healing room is there is a mirror on top of the above on the wall above the altar, and as I would sit and focus on a candle flame that was on the altar, I could see the flame in the mirror as well as my eyes softly lit by the light of the candle in the mirror as well, and I could either focus into the candle flame or I could focus into my own eyes. And that's another concentration meditation that sometimes you'll find people do with a partner, where they will gaze deeply into each other's eyes. And that was something that I felt called to when I was just a young girl, really a young woman around age 11, 12. I really was attracted by the idea of just gazing into the eyes of my mother or of a friend. And I even asked a few friends to do that with me. So it's interesting to me just to remember that deep call to meditation that I had as a child. And perhaps you can think of something that called you in a similar way into meditation as a child. It can be any number of things, you know, sitting on the edge of the pool with your feet twirling in the, sitting on the edge of a riverbank or something with your feet twirling in the water, something that just kind of calls and holds your concentration for a little while. All of those are forms of meditation. that are actually quite traditional because they go back in our human experience for so many thousands of years. And, of course, the value of the concentration meditation is that it really helps us to get grounded. We really own our bodies. We really become present here in the physical. And it gives us a sense of stability. It kind of stabilizes our mind, and as well it calms our mind. And in some situations, when we really take the concentration meditation into a far reach, we can find an experience of bliss. So that's a really lovely type of meditation. And, of course, there have been concentration meditations practiced throughout many religious traditions around the world for thousands of years. Out of the Kabbalistic Jewish tradition, there is that meditative ecstatic Kabbalah, which where the practitioner goes ahead and mentions to themselves or out loud the names of God repeatedly. Out of the Christian faith, there's a really interesting recent revival of a very ancient meditation that comes from the Christian monks and nuns of the desert traditions. And they are working on recovering that contemplative dimension of the Christian faith. And they use a mantra, so that's the sound going for calling the concentration. And the mantra is Maranatha, 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 Maranatha. And they emphasize saying all four of the syllables. And what that means in translation, it's an Aramaic word, and it means the Lord is coming, or come, O Lord. And that harkens back to the time of the Romans. And what the essence of that meditation is really simplicity. It's simplicity and silence and stillness. And it helps the practitioner to really let go of their distractions and just come to that place of silence within. Then the Islamic faith, I just absolutely have been so captivated by the Sufi spinning, that whirling that happens. And that's really a worship ceremony that's done in a meditative way. And what they're doing in that dancing is they're focusing on God. They're using they're spinning, their body spinning as a symbolic imitation of the planets in the solar system orbiting around the sun. And then that tall, sort of tan-colored camel hair hat that they wear, that represents the tombstone of the ego, which I just love. Yeah. And then that white skirt that is swirling around, that's the ego's shroud. And when they remove their black cloak at the start of the dance, they are feeling that the feeling that they have is that they are being spiritually reborn to the truth. And then the practitioner, and I love this, they hold their arms crosswise over their chest. And then as they begin their spinning, they raise up, and that holding over crosswise is to sort of testify that they to God's unity. And then when they start their whirling, they usually raise up their right arm up to the sky, which says that they're ready to receive God's beneficence. And then with the left hand, which is what they focus on with their eyes, which helps you to keep from not getting dizzy when you're spinning, that is conveying that their eyes are fastened towards the earth. So they're really grounding themselves while they are bringing in this unity of the divine and opening to God's beneficence. It is just wonderful. And then that they also take one step further, which is that when they're revolving from right to left, they're embracing all humanity with their love. And there's a lovely quote by Rumi about the Sufi spinning, which says, all loves are a bridge to divine love. Yet those who have not had a taste of it do not know. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also oral traditions. I'm sure that, though I don't have any, because the oral traditions don't have a written record, so we don't have a record necessarily about meditation practices that have taken place among the indigenous peoples of the world. But we know that they have done so just because they're human, and it's only natural for us to find ourselves in meditation. And then, of course, there's Hinduism with transcendental meditation, which is such a beautiful practice. It's you've studied a little bit of transcendental meditation, haven't you, Tony?
No, not really transcendental meditation.
Well, no. It was brought here by Maharishi, who was known as the Giggling Guru, and this is a branch of Hinduism. And he was charged by his guru, Guru Dev, to go ahead and to travel the world and teach the masses this particular type of meditation. And TM is one of the most studied meditations that there are. I guess Maharishi brought it here sometime in the mid-1950s. And this is a mantra meditation, so this is using sound. And I think that Maharishi taught something like 5 million people the technique.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And I heard he also trained 40,000 people to become teachers of TM.
Isn't that just extraordinary?
You're a very busy man.
Yeah, that's doing a lot of work. And the Beach Boys, of course, and the Beatles really brought it to popularity in the 1970s. And we had that wonderful quote from Ringo last week about how at the end of the day he can just be wacky. And if he meditates, you know, during his day he can make mountains out of molehills. But if he meditates, they all become molehills again. It's such a nice thought. And I think it's really true. When we do meditate, we really do calm ourselves. And with TM, there's usually a certified instructor who gives the meditator a mantra, and then they are to say their mantra to themselves twice a day for 15 to 20 minutes at a time. And the mantra is selected to benevolently assist that practitioner with, you know, health benefits and heightened levels of consciousness. But it's also to help bring societal benefits to humanity as a whole. So that's a really nice intention that comes behind TM. And they look at it not so much as a religious practice, but rather a scientific and spiritual organization, which I think is really nice. So if you're interested in finding a TM certified instructor, you know, I think seek and you will find. Probably the internet is going to have some wonderful possibilities for you there. And I really believe in that great spiritual law of ask and you shall receive. So if you just let the universe know that you're interested in finding an instructor for TM, you probably will find one. Now, myself, I'm a little bit of a self-taught gal. I went ahead and just made up my own mantra, found something that felt right to me that was monosyllabic. And this was maybe 15, 20 years ago when I was sort of exploring with different types of meditation. And I did it quite regularly for a while, and I did find it to bring great calming effects. But I didn't really play by the rules. I didn't really get a certified instructor. I just sort of winged it. But still, I thought it was really a lovely practice. And then there's one kind of funny story that I have to tell about TM, which was that there was this one instructor who was choosing a mantra for the practitioner. And the practitioner had come to him, and she was, she needed a little more levity in her life. She was kind of serious. And so the mantra that she was given was Sen Sa Hu Ma. Sen Sa Hu Ma. And when she caught the joke, which was sense of humor, because it's supposed to be nonsensical, monosyllabic, you know, when she really just, I heard she just laughed out loud and long. So that's pretty great.
That's a very nice story.
It is. And then one more little story on using mantras. There was a beautiful one that my mentor and teacher, Jana Massey, gave to us, which was Om Maha Tu Om Tu Pa. Om Maha Tu Om Tu Pa. And the Om Maha Tu means, as I go forward in peace, the Om Tu Pa says, all needs met. And I will often just affirm Om Tu Pa. If I see it like a crisis situation or something that's in a disturbance in the society or in the way people are interacting, I'll often just say to myself, Om Tu Pa, all needs met, so that everybody finds a way to be comfortable and happy. Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
A very nice little thing. Yeah. So then let's see. Moving on to I know what. There was one more I wanted to mention, which was breathing. And breathing meditation is another way that we can have this concentration. So last week, perhaps you remember, we gave that little affirmation from Thich Nhat Hanh out of his book, Being Peace, which goes, breathing in, I calm my body, and breathing out, I smile, which is a wonderful meditation, just that in itself, and a nice way for us to calm ourselves. And but the counting meditation that I'd like to share with you, I'd love to do as a little exercise, if you'd all like to join in.
Well, I certainly would.
Okay, good. And so for this one, let's just inhale to the count of four, because usually it takes our inhale just a little longer than the exhale, and then exhale to the count of two. And then we'll inhale to the count of six and exhale to the count of four. And then we'll inhale to the count of eight and exhale to the count of six. And the purpose here is that when we're slightly changing the length of our breath, our inhale and our exhale, and we are counting, that gives our mind a lot to focus on. And so we really do have to concentrate on it. And that gives us a little break in that constant chatter that we have in our minds. So let's go ahead and try this exercise together now then. So find a comfortable spot on your chair or wherever. And if you're driving a car or operating machinery, of course, you're going to want to save this one to practice later. But if you are in a place where you can just sit, just go ahead and relax. And if you like, you can close your eyes or you can leave them open, depending on what you prefer. And then let's go ahead and inhale to the count of four. One, two, three, four. And now exhale to the count of two. One, two. Now we'll inhale to the count of six. One, two, three, four, five, six. And exhale to the count of four. One, two, three, four. And now to eight. In one, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. And out six. One, two, three, four, five, six. And then just allow yourself to come back to your normal waking consciousness. A nice example of a breathing meditation. How was that for you, Tony?
That was very nice. I could imagine sinking very quickly, very deeply into an altered state if I were to do that for any length of time.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? And I do love to give homeworks, and so I'd like to give a little homework exercise. If you get a chance sometime this week, if you can get into a warm bathtub or maybe a hot tub or something, and go ahead and practice this counting meditation in the bathtub, and just see, and there'll be, this one is slightly different. This one is inhale for one, exhale for one. Inhale for two, exhale for two. Inhale for three, exhale for three. So inhale for four, one, two, three, four. Exhale for four. One, two, three, four. And just see how far you can get without thinking a thought. It's pretty tricky, but it's really good. And I've made it up to seven once, just once, and I was so stunned. And then I thought, oh, my gosh, I've made it up to seven. And of course, that was a thought, and that was the end of that. But if the for the very practitioner, I understand you can make it all the way up to 10 and back down again to 1 if you're really good. But I'm certainly not there. So that'll be a homework assignment. And then there's also devotional singing, which is a great way for us to contemplate and to really concentrate. And so contemporarily we have the Beatles, you know, all you need is love, da 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 da. All you need is love, dun, 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 dun. All you need is love, love, love is all you need, love. So that's a lovely one.
That takes me back in time.
It does, doesn't it? And there's another one that I just recently learned that I'll just sing for you right now. I step into the flow and then I let it go. I open my mind, my heart, and my soul. Step into the flow, and then I let it go. I open my mind, my heart, and my soul. I step into the flow, and then I let it go. I open my mind, my heart, and my soul. I surrender. I surrender. I surrender. I open my mind, my heart, and my soul. Isn't that a nice one?
That was beautiful. Thank you.
Sure. Our friend Yarrow has been teaching that to friends, and another friend of mine taught it to me recently, and I just thought, oh, that's so beautiful. And you can see how with a repeated phrase like that, how you could really just lose yourself.
Totally. It's very trance-inducing, isn't it?
It is very trance-inducing. And I think that that's part of why musicians, so love playing music. I wish I was talented enough to play a musical instrument, but I sometimes think I have a new friend who plays violin, and I think, wow, what a great experience that would be for a concentration meditation, you know, to really focus in on the notes and catching holding the instrument just right to catch the notes just perfectly, and what a great thing that is. Yeah.
Fantastic. It reminds me of, a Sufi saying, There is there's a kind of Sufi singing, ecstatic singing called Qawwali, and that's improvised singing where they allow God, Allah, to sing through them. And there's this old saying which says there's two ways that God can bless a person. One is to be able to sing Qawwali, and the other is to be able to appreciate somebody else singing Qawwali.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's very nice.
Oh, that's lovely.
So I feel very blessed that I'm able to enjoy your singing, Josephine.
Oh, thank you, Tony. And so then I have another homework. I've got a lot of homework assignments for you guys this week because it's just such a fun thing to do to practice meditation. And so this one is, again, a concentration meditation homework assignment. But it's a really, really lovely one that I know you're going to really enjoy. It's really more like a home play assignment. And that's to just go to the backyard or out to the river or to the ocean and either gaze at the sky or over the water of the ocean or of a river or gaze at a mountain or gaze at the leaves in a tree. And this, of course, can be very quick, just a matter of seconds, or you can really let yourself sink right into it for a good 20 minutes or so.
Now, that really appeals to me. That's something that I really do enjoy doing a lot of.
Yeah.
If there was more time to do it.
Yeah. I've heard you speak in the past about going out on the pier, and I just think that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, I enjoy that, but also the sky as well.
Yeah.
Very nice, especially here in California. But, Josephine, we have a caller on the line.
Oh, good. How lovely. Excellent.
Welcome.
Hi, this is Barbara. Hi, Josephine.
Oh, hi,
Tony. Hi, Frank. Hi. Happy birthday, Frank, yesterday. I've been listening to all these different choices of meditation, and I know you have more also to offer us. Most of the meditation that I've done has been chakra clearing. I think you probably were going to get to that. At that time, that was good. I've also done the candle and the mirror, and that worked for me also. But I haven't been meditating for a while. But I really think that this breathing meditation would encapsulate all the ingredients that I personally need. And I think it is a personal commitment, and it's an intention of what do you need to get out of that meditation? What are you looking for? Are you looking for a clearing, or are you looking for some discipline for your mind? And with the breathing one, it's active. It's it relaxes you because it is a breathing exercise, and it does get your heart rate down, and you get your breathing stilled. But you're putting your mind on a single point. And in order to get it, you know, get those counts done, you have to really, you have to concentrate. So you're having the ability to both concentrate and relax in one meditation. So for me, I think that is going to be really helpful. I knew about the breathing concentration, but I was thinking, well, you know, do I want to find a way to relax? But a lot of us, you know, fall asleep when we're doing a relaxing meditation. I know that the Dalai Lama says, well, that's the best kind of meditation. But he also said that when you focus on meditation, that the more intensely involved you are on the object that you're meditating on, the more alert you are, and that's in Buddhist tradition, that is transfixing. To be, your mind is should light up, and when it lights up, you would not fall asleep. And of course, that's the that's the point he's at after many, many years, but it. It kind of answers that thing about falling asleep.
Yes, it does.
You know, you have to kind of choose what your intention is. Your intention to meditate, to just kind of relax, or is it to discipline your mind? But in this case with the breathing, I could see how that really could be both. it could be both. And
oh, yeah.
So thanks.
I'm so glad you're excited about it.
I've been bugging you for a long time. How do you meditate, you know? And I'm so glad that you've been doing this series on meditation, because I've been doing some research on it, you know, recently. That's why I could, you know, quote what the Dalai Lama said. I've been looking on the wonderful source of YouTube.
It's
been really, really great. And so, you know, this, for me personally, I have achieved another level from this talk today. Thank you, darling.
Gosh,
and happy birthday tomorrow.
Oh, thank you. And happy birthday to you coming up Saturday.
Okay. Lots of love to all of you. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Barbara, so much for calling in.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, so that was nice.
That was very nice.
It's lovely to have Barbara call today.
Oh, and I can see that, too, about the breathing meditation, how it can both energize you and also relax you at the same time.
Yes, isn't that great? What a great point that she brought up about that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, excellent. So I'll go in now to our second type of meditation, which is the open awareness. And this is all about being present with whatever arises, about really staying in that present moment and observing what passes through our mind and what's going on around us. And the value, of course, is that we can really gain an insight into the nature of experience. It really increases our understanding, and it can, ta-da, bring us to enlightenment.
Mm.
So this is the, there is a wonderful Jewish Kabbalistic tradition that comes from a long ways back when Elijah was on Mount Carmel, and he sat in what was called the historical prophetic position. And that was where the knees, that one places their head between their knees. And it said that they bend themselves like reeds, placing their head between their knees until all their faculties are nullified. As a result of this lack of sensation, they see the light with true vision and not with allegory. And I thought that was such an interesting perspective. And that, of course, was how the prophecies were arrived upon. It's the prophetic position. And then, as well, there's the position of the Buddha sitting underneath the Bodhi tree, which is such a famous story, and where he sits in silence and in the lotus position, and all of these energies arise around him to try to distract him from his purpose of enlightenment, but he's able to hold steady and then reaches enlightenment. And then also the nature religions, I'm certain that as they would go on their vision quests and things, that there would be times where they would open completely to the nature of awareness, the nature of experience, and to enlightenment. And Zen is all about this type of particular meditation. And so I'll just go into Zen just a little bit, which is otherwise known as seated meditation. And Zen grew out of the Mahayana tradition, and is usually considered to be Japanese Zen Buddhism. And what that seated position is all about is to calm the mind, the body and the mind, and to concentrate enough to experience that insight into the nature of existence. And then, of course, as I mentioned, gain enlightenment. And so what happens in Zen is there is, and I have a dear friend who shared with me, who is a Zen practitioner, and she shared with me a video on her Zen practice that she does with Charlotte Yoko Beck. And there was an official ringing of a bell at the start of the practice, and the practitioners are all lined up and waiting outside of the hall. And then they all quietly come in a very orderly fashion. And then they stand in front of their zafu, their little pillow that they will sit themselves on. And then there's two types. Either they face to the center or they face outward to the wall. And before they take their seat, they usually bow to their seat, and then and after rising, they'll also do that again, and then they bow to their fellow practitioners on either side of them. And then they sit and begin their meditation. And this is a seated posture, so they're either sitting in the full lotus with their feet tucked up on top of their thighs, or the half lotus, which is sort of not quite that extreme, but it's still very comfortable position. And then, or else just cross-legged with the soles of the feet, or the ankles either crossed or the soles of the feet placed together in front of the sitter. And then as they're sitting, they are erect. They've got their folded legs and folded hands over their belly, over their hara, where the breath comes in. That's the, you know, the center of gravity in the belly. And then they are erect, but they are also poised. So it's like a relaxed, erect position. And then the eyelids are half-lowered, and that half-lowered eyelid helps them to neither be distracted nor turn away from what's around them. And then sometimes, also too in Zen, if the practitioner needs to, they can sit in a chair as well. But that's not as common as the sitting on the zafu. And then there's the three pillars that come into the instruction, which is that concentration on the breath, often through counting. That's usually the first way the practitioner will begin with a Zazen practice, is they'll begin with counting the breath. And then from that, they'll go on either to the koan introspection, which is that non-solvable riddle that helps them to move into the reality beyond thought, or else they'll just sit with the present moment and non-thinking. And I love that one about the present moment when non-thinking. There's a quote by, in fact, I think we have a slide for this one, the fifth slide today, which is by Dogen in the Shobogenzo. And he said, "Sitting fixedly, think of not thinking. How do you think of not thinking? Non-thinking. This is the art of Zazen."
Hmm.
That's a nice koan all unto itself.
Yeah, it's lovely. I mean, it's making me think of my friend Tim, who's written quite a lot on different spiritual traditions. And one of the things he likes to say is one of the koan sayings, or one of the teachings, is that a koan is like a finger pointing at the moon. And one of the piece of Zen advice is, be careful not to mistake the finger for the moon. And a lot of people,
nice.
You know, seeing the words or whatever, getting focused on them and not the reality that it's pointing to.
Yeah.
And something else I was thinking of that was somebody asking the master, you know, how do you attain this, you know, awakened state, this enlightened state, or whatever it is. And the master said, "Do you hear that babbling brook? And enter there."
Oh, that's so great. Yeah, that's wonderful. To just focus in on the babbling brook and then boom, in you go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that reminds me of that listening bird idea that I sometimes share about how, you know, "Oh, did you hear that bird outside?" And as you pause for just a second there to listen to see if you can hear that bird, it helps to bring us right in, doesn't it?
Oh, it certainly works for me every time.
That's great, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I heard a wonderful story about a woman who was in a nursing home, and she went into the nursing home when she turned 90, I think, and this woman, a hospice worker, came to visit her. She came to work in the nursing home and visit the different people there, and she took an interest in this one woman because she hadn't spoken. She was 95 now, and she hadn't spoken in 5 years. And every day the assistants would help her to get dressed and get her into a wheelchair, and then they'd wheel her to a window. And that's all she wanted to do, was to sit and look out the window. And it was a second-story room, and so she could see, you know, the tops of the trees and the sky and the distant mountains. And she would just sit there all day. And so one day this young hospice worker, this woman, joined her sitting by her side all day long. And she just sat there with her. She just thought, "I'm just going to do this. I'm just going to be with this woman." And at the end of the day, the older woman turned to the younger woman, and she reached out her hand and touched her hand, and she said, "You know, I just want to let you know, these last 5 years have been the most profound years of my life." And with that, she had spoken for the first time in 5 years.
Wow.
And, you know, that just is a testament to that deep concentration, gazing meditation, where that can take us into that open awareness, that insight into the nature of experience and into enlightenment. I just thought that was so beautiful.
Yeah, it's making me think of that quote that you sometimes give of the Buddha, "Do nothing, time is too precious to waste."
Yes, isn't that great?
Mm.
I love that one. Yeah, and then I forgot to mention earlier, Charlotte Joko Beck, my friend Satyo's teacher, she has a wonderful quote that she uses too, which is, be with what is. Isn't that great?
Mm, very, very nice.
Yeah.
You know, I think all this talk of Zen is reminding me of my friend Sonu. This is many, many years ago. We were in London, and there was Zen meditation was offered free by some very experienced Zen master, and you could go and have it in Hyde Park, and there's a little, I think you call it a dojo, I'm not absolutely sure, set up there.
Uh-huh.
So Sonu went along, he was very interested in this whole thing, and he sat down and was asked to meditate. And then a couple of minutes later, the guy comes along with this big wooden paddle and smacks him with it.
Oh,
and apparently he wasn't paying attention sufficiently well. And then a couple of minutes later, whang,
oh.
It happens again. And then
oh,
whang,
gosh.
Again. And after about, I don't know, 30 minutes of this, he decided it wasn't for him. And he left.
Yeah, I don't think it would be for me either. I've heard of that before.
So, yeah, I don't know if it's a cultural difference or whatever it is, but I think the idea is that it's going to force you to actually pay attention and wake up.
Yes.
I'm not completely sure. But
yeah.
I've always remembered that account.
And there's something about that posture, that when the Zen practitioner is in that posture, there is a disappearance of bodily sensation. You kind of have to ride through that so that
mm-hmm.
pain and other sensations begin to disappear. And then you slip into a place beyond that reality, which I think is the whole purpose behind it. But, yeah, I don't think I could do with that either. It's not my style. I've had too many injuries to have anybody tell me how to sit with my body.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm sure it's really well-intentioned. I'm sure the Zen master is convinced that this is going to help you get to where you need to get to.
Well, and it certainly has helped so many. And the people that I know that have really practiced Zen, it's just phenomenal what the benefits that brings.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it is just to each his own. And that's what's so nice about having so many types of meditation to choose from. Like Barbara said, you know, you can kind of find your way in,
mm-hmm.
in whatever works for you personally. And there's the third type of meditation that I'd like to go into right now, and this is the mindfulness meditation. And I love mindfulness meditation. It's such a wonderful thing. And when I was a teenager, I had a friend who got a little publication in the mail every day, a little tiny pamphlet, and it was called The Daily Word. And it was such a wonderful example of a Christian mindfulness meditation, because that daily insight and inspiration for, you know, contemplation helped people. It was designed for people of all faiths, but she was a Christian, and that's the context that she used it in. And that really helps us to live more healthy and meaningful lives when we can have something that is a little insight and an inspiration for us to really think about. And then, of course, in the Islamic tradition, there's that dwelling in Allah's love that comes. There's a number of meditative prayers, and often suggested to be read to your spouse and take turns reading it about. I'm just realizing that you're just dwelling in the love of Allah all the time. And then, again, different traditions that, like the Sufi dancing, you know, where there are repeated poems and things that help us to just really realize that loving kindness, that wonderful thing. And then Vipassana, of course, is the real star for loving kindness meditations. And Vipassana also is kind of interesting because it involves all three types of the meditation that we've discussed so far today. It has the breathing, which helps with the concentration, and then it has the insight, which opens the awareness, and then it also has that loving kindness, that mindfulness in meditation. And one of my very favorite Vipassana meditations is metta meditation, which is the meditation of moving into that loving kindness space. And maybe we should just jump right into this exercise right now. And so if you'd like, just go ahead and settle in for another little quick meditation, and I'll just lead you briefly through a metta meditation. I have some friends who have the Sukha Wellness Center here in Avila Beach, and they named their daughter Metta, and I just think that's such a beautiful thing. That's a wonderful name for a child. And so in metta, we usually begin with remembering ourselves, because it's very difficult to love others if you don't first love yourself. And perhaps, Tony, you can show our next slide also, which is this metta meditation, the basis of it.
There it is.
And as you go ahead and relax and take a couple of easy breaths. And again, you can do this open-eyed or closed-eyed. And just allow yourself to sink into the intention of the words and let your loving feelings grow as you hear the words. So it goes like this. May I be happy. May I be well. May I be safe. May I be peaceful and at ease. And then as a practitioner, you would just mentally repeat this slowly and steadily. And then after you feel very deeply involved in this particular aspect of the meditation, then you progress on to a broader perspective with feelings of warmth and friendliness and love arising up out of you. And you go ahead and extend your loving kindness not only towards yourself, but also perhaps to a friend who you might want to bring into mind, or someone in your life who has cared deeply for you or who you care deeply for. And then again, the same phrase. May you be happy. May you be well. May you be safe. May you be peaceful and at ease. And then if you like, you can even take it further out to the world and think not just of one person, but of everyone in the world. And then again, may you be happy. May you be well. May you be safe. May you be peaceful and at ease. And then allow yourself to come back to your normal waking consciousness. Isn't that lovely?
Yes, it is. Very, very nice. And it also is energizing and relaxing too.
Yeah, and Vipassana is, the one that is commonly referred to as insight meditation. And I guess there are two main branches of Vipassana, the Theravadin and the Mahayana. And the Mahayana was more for the general public, and it was okay for them to use statues of the Buddha, but the Theravadin was a little more for the elders or the ascetics. And that came out of Burma and Thailand. And it's a little more of that contemplation on the impermanence. And I guess all Vipassana pretty much starts with that breath, that ever-changing nature of breathing. And then the mindfulness to pay attention to the breath as the breath rises and falls away. And then that lets us really realize that there is that impermanence of all things, that the breath is one of those things that it comes and then it goes. And it also has a changing nature. It doesn't stay the same. It does change as we breathe. And then there's as well deeper levels that you go into, like what they're trying to accomplish in Zen, where those gross bodily sensations like pain or itching or whatever, that those sort of drift away too, and there's replaced by an awareness of a more subtle energies that are flowing through the body. And then the yogini or the yogi in Zen, as they progress with their practice, they lose all cravings or attachments. And they lose their aversions and their fears, and they eventually reach the knowledge of equanimity and emotional stability and composure and equilibrium, which are all such wonderful qualities. And, of course, this is why we meditate, is to help ourselves find that. And to me, the simplest way to really step into Vipassana is to just step out into nature, because there we can just watch our breath. We can sit very simply and just watch our breath come and go. And just notice if the breath is short or panting, or if it's long or deep, or however it is. Just feel it coming and leaving from the body. And ta-da, there you are in the first step of Vipassana. And the longer you practice, the deeper you go with moving into those different levels of awareness. And coming into those insights, those open awarenesses. And then progressing from there into that wonderful loving kindness state where you really feel that benevolence towards yourself and towards the whole world. It's a beautiful practice, really. There's another one that I learned from James Baraz. He's the founder of Spirit, one of the founding teachers at Spirit Rock Meditation Center in Northern California. And I love what he says, too. He suggests that there are three qualities to facilitate waking, and they are forgiveness, a sense of humor, and patience. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
And he gives another one that I learned years ago. I actually had the good fortune of taking a class from him. And his meta-meditation went like this. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be free from suffering. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. Isn't that lovely?
Mm.
Such a nice thing to sink right down into. Yeah, I love that. So, and then lastly, we've got our fourth type, which is guided meditation. And, of course, this is our topic for next week, so we'll largely be getting into it then. But what I love about guided meditation is that it is so pertinent to psychic ability, especially when we do guided imagery meditation. But you can also just do guided meditations like affirmations, like, for instance, one of my favorite meditations when I was healing from some of those really big injuries that I had was to, I would make a recording of my own voice on a tape recording and just let it play itself, I would let that play to myself as I was falling asleep. And they would just be wonderful positive affirmations like, I love my life and my life loves me. Or I love myself wholly and completely. Or only good lies before me. Or I give myself ample time for rest and introspection. I have a good mind. I organize my thoughts and my life easily. I'm glad to be alive. I love my partner and my partner loves me. I look to the strength, the power, and the light. And on it would go. I would just have this nice long list of affirmations that I had crafted and you know, kind of designed specifically for myself so that I could really find peace and ease as I was drifting off to sleep. And I was first inspired by the idea of making a tape for myself by Louise Hay, who she has wondered, she's the queen of affirmations, positive affirmations, and helping ourselves really get out of those negative thought patterns of self-loathing and step into self-love and self-support. And I listened to a tape of hers that was about forgiveness, and she was talking about how our parents sometimes, you know, we feel anger or upset with the way that we were raised, especially if the conditions were less than optimal, as is so often the case. And she said to imagine your parents as little children and to understand that, you know, what they did the best job they could with what they had, and that they also had difficulties when they were children, perhaps, and to just so see them as innocent little children and then just scoop them up and place them into your heart. And that was such a nice guided imagery, guided meditation to fall asleep by, the forgiveness meditations that she would give. And so those I really recommend as well. But if we have time, I'd like to just do one quick little last meditation. Do you think we have time, Tony?
Well, only just.
Okay, only just then. Let's put on the last slide, which is a body scan. And it says, what would your feet like to say to you?
Hmm.
And so with this one, I'll let you do this as a homework assignment, but I'll get you started with it. And it's a meditation, so you would just relax and get comfortable. And then breathe a couple of nice and easy breaths, and then you just let your attention move to your feet. And you think about your feet, and you say, what would my feet like to say to me? And they might say that they're happy, or they might say that they're tired, or they might say they'd like a massage, or maybe a nice foot soak. Or maybe they're just content to be, or maybe your feet want to do more dancing or running or whatever it is. And then you move from the feet to the ankles, and then from the ankles to the lower legs, and then from the legs to the knees and the thighs, and on up the body all the way to the top of the head. And it's a wonderful little meditation that's a guided meditation that we can do for ourselves. And we can, you know, ask our organs how they're doing. You know, how is my liver? What would you like to say to me? Or my kidneys, what would you like to say to me? Oh, thank you for that wonderful kidney cleanse you're doing this week. That just feels so great. And you know, just listen to what the body might have to say. So with that, I guess I better turn it over to you.
Well, thank you so much, Josephine. Yes, we are down to just a few minutes left. So I'd like to say that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Simply click on the top menu for radio. And if you have a question for us or would like to be included in our weekly newsletter, simply go to the contact page of Josephine's website. Again, that's stepintomagic.com, and you can send us a message. So, Josephine, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Oh, yes. Well, I thank you so much for that, Tony, and I'd just like to say that meditation has been practiced for thousands of years by a tremendous diversity of people all around the world. And mindfulness meditations, like the meditation from Vipassana, Please help us to gain, you know, greater self-knowledge and experience more love. And concentration meditations like breathing meditations or mantra meditations like transcendental meditations can help us to calm our bodies and our mind and gain control of our thoughts and find inner peace. And then those beautiful open awareness meditations like Zen help us to free ourselves from the prison of our minds and gain insight into the true nature of being. And then guided imagery meditations help us to heal our bodies and receive psychic impressions. Well, what could be wrong with that? It's great. And then in closing, I'd just like to thank all of you so very much for giving me the gift of your time. And I'd like to finish with this little blessing. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned. And so it is.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you on the radio. And I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about time-honored techniques of meditation. This has been show number M-2.14. And if you have enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends, and we look forward to having all of you join us again next week when Josephine will be talking about guided imagery meditation techniques, including, I believe, some of the meditations that she uses in her clairvoyant healing work.
Yes, indeed I will. And Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing. And I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.
Mm-hmm.